This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Crank up the volume, because today we begin our holiday weekend series on hard rock and heavy metal.
Judas is rising!
As the lead singer of the British heavy metal band Judas Priest, my guest Rob Halford became famous for his powerful voice, the leather studs and handcuffs he wore on stage, and the way he often made his stage entrance on his motorcycle. Judas Priest is one of the originators of heavy metal and one of the most theatrical and successful bands in the genre. Famous for such songs as Hellbent for Leather, Ram It Down, You've Got Another Thing Coming, and this one from 1980, Breaking the Law.
There I was completely wasting, out of work and down. All inside, it's so frustrating, as I drink from town to town. Feel as though nobody cares if I live or die. So I might as well begin to put some action in my life. Breaking the law.
Some parents took Priest's evil boasts at face value. The parents of two young men sued the band, claiming one of their records convinced the young man to commit suicide. In 1990, the judge ruled in favor of the band. Rob Halford started singing with Priest back in 1971. He left the band in the early 90s and later surprised his fans by coming out. Being gay sure didn't fit the stereotype of the heavy metal god. Halford returned to Judas Priest in 2003. I spoke with him in 2005. So what's it like more than 30 years after you started in Judas Priest to be, you know, putting on the costumes again, the leather and the, you know, the studs and the collars and all the stuff. And then to be singing these kind of, these anthems that were like teenage anthems of defiance for your audience.
Yeah.
But so many of the people who were your fans early on are probably in positions of authority themselves now. I bet there's a lot of, really, I bet there's
that's
a lot of like
no, that's
cops
cool.
who are your fans and teachers
well,
are
that,
your fans and
you
parents
know,
who are your fans.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And you've just named three parts of society which attend frequently Judas Priest shows.
And used to be terrified
friend,
of you, right?
Yeah,
like the
well,
police
maybe
of that
so.
Era.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You wouldn't believe the amount of law enforcement that loved Judas Priest, especially here in New York City. And here we are, a band that wrote this song called Breaking the Law.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's quite remarkable. But I think beyond that, there's this incredible bond that is maintained with our fan base internationally.
One of the things that has changed is that you're out now. And this is the first time you're performing with Judas Priest since you've been out. And do you think that changes anything for you and the band, or changes the way your audience sees you?
Well, I think it destroys the myth of, you know, the so-called intolerance and homophobia that was supposedly existing in heavy metal. Having said that, I think that if I'd have done this earlier in the 70s or the 80s, things may have been a bit more difficult. But that's a kind of a debatable question, because we never really confronted the issue at that time. I wanted to do it for myself, like any gay man or lesbian woman, and anyone that wants to, you know, bring this forward and make a proclamation is it's what you're entitled to. It's your own right, so to speak. But I was always protective of Judas Priest. I always felt that had I done this any earlier or had I done it in different circumstances, the fallout would have damaged the band, and I would never do anything to hurt the band or its reputation or its following. So I think that you know, the timing was right, and just for me personally, it was a great moment of release.
You know what I love about the fact that you did come out is, I think for so many teenage boys, heavy metal is not only about the music, it's about, you know, these fantasies of like orgies with women, you know, and having all the women and how you're going to treat the women.
Yeah, the sex and drugs and rock and roll thing.
Yeah, and you know, if nothing else, it's like your coming out really complicates all of the cliches about, you know, the sex part of the sex, drugs and rock and roll. And it takes it out of this kind of simplistic, sometimes misogynistic fantasy that I think teenage boys have.
Exactly. Well, Without labouring on one element here, just the teenage boy element, because of course the thing about Judas Priest's music is that we're not the same as every other heavy metal band. I think we've created our own niche, our own particular mm-hmm. stamp, identity, trademark, whatever you want to call it. And if you look at the broad catalogue of this band's material, some hundreds and hundreds of songs over a three-decade span, I think that that's just one small focus of area.
Well, a lot of your songs have this kind of like mythic quality to it.
Yes, they do.
Like even the song Hill Rider, which we opened with, yes. from the new CD. I'm just going to forgive me as I read some of the lyrics.
Please do. Go ahead.
Okay. Hill Rider, you slot them all extinguished. Wrath of doom in killing fields they consume for valiance never yield. Triumph yes. to the gods vanquished yes. of enslavers.
Absolutely.
So,
well, there
just,
you
like,
go.
Overblown mythic language.
Isn't it wonderful? It's wonderful, but you see what the overriding story is there. The overriding story is of optimism, and the overriding story is of defeating anything that that stands in your way, that prevents you from achieving your goals or your dreams. And
but this has really like archaic language. You slot them all.
but that's because I love the English language. My favorite book is the Thesaurus. You know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm constantly looking to find words and language that some bands would maybe hesitate to use, or they're not able to because of the arena that they work in.
Now, there's the Judas Priest sound. There's also the Judas Priest look, and I mean, you were one of the creators of that look of wearing, you know, the leather and the studded collars and the handcuffs and the choke chains and, mm. I mean, all the stuff that almost looks like fetish gear.
Mm. Well, it is to some extent.
Yeah.
Although maybe not so much now because...
Because it's a genre now. It's
well,
like,
no, it's because I can spend some money on some outfits, whereas before I had to go to the local S&M shop and pick up something for £2. That's the truth of it all. Yeah, I used to go down to my local Mr. S shop in London and put 10 quid down and try and grab a little bit of this and a little bit of that and slowly put it together, you know. But yes, that's something that we're very proud of. For a number of the early formative years of metal, the image was not really tying in to the fierceness and the strength and power of the music, and we kind of stumbled upon it with a song called Hellbent for Leather, which is very much a biker anthem song. We actually started to use the motorcycle at that point too. So all of these things kind of connected and created the heavy metal look. So yes, blame us for that.
And this isn't meant to be as personal as it's going to sound, but was all the leather and handcuffs and fetish gear an expression of your personal lifestyle or just good theatrical costuming?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm sure if there was a couch here for me to lay on with a psychiatrist, he'd probably go, yeah, that's what you were doing, Rob. Who knows? I don't know. As I said, it was never part of a deliberate intent for me. But yeah, I would hasten to say, because you're the first person ever to ask me this question, that subconsciously that was my way of saying, look, this is who I am. But in my outward kind of conscious level, that was never a thought, because that would have meant that I would have been using the band and my look for some kind of agenda, which I've never had.
When you say that it was in some ways a level of who you were, was it like a fantasy level of who you were, or?
Oh yes, yes. Well, I don't know. This is just kind of an open, free-forming kind of thought here. No, I mean, I'm not particularly attracted to that world or that fantasy element of what that lifestyle presents. It's just of no interest to me personally. It was all about, in all honesty, the fact that putting all that stuff on and looking at yourself in a mirror before you went on stage felt absolutely the right thing to do.
Well, since you've mentioned Hellbent for Leather, I think we should hear it. So this is Judas Priest, Hellbent for Leather.
Never known that he'll ever overweight and just taken over. Hear the roar as they sense the fear.
Wheels
echo the steel and a flash of light.
Screams
from a streak of fire as he strikes.
Hellbent, hellbent for leather. Hellbent, hellbent for leather.
Judas Priest shows are quite theatrical experiences. How did you head in that direction of making it, like, theatrical?
Well, it just comes from being a kid, you know. I mean, when I was in my early grades at school, I was able to get into the school choir and be a part of all of the school productions, much like a lot of kids do. And I just ran to that. It made me feel good inside. So there was a point in my life when it was a kind of a toss-up between whether I was going to actually go from school, high school, into drama school and drama university in England. But I chose to go with music because that was the love of my life at that time, and it still is today. So I think I brought that theatrical desire with me to Priest, and I was always, you know, at the band meetings pushing for this lighting effect or that stage set or these costume ideas or these smoke machines or, you know, pyrotechnics, whatever it might be, whatever is really theatrical, came from my love of the theatre and the magic that it can make.
For listeners who haven't seen your show, can you describe one of the most theatrical things?
We have a moment going on in this current Angel of Retribution worldwide tour that we do. There's an opening cut from Angel of Retribution called Judas Rising, and I appear behind the drum riser on a 50-foot hoist, a man lift, a pneumatic man lift, and at the bottom of the hoist is this theatrical flame fire effect. And so there's an intro, there's a piece of intro tape that works with that song, and the man lift, as it's called, is being taken up to about 50 feet, and there's all of this smoke and fire billowing around my feet, and I'm wearing this outfit made out of pure reflective chrome, and hit with two or three spotlights against a backdrop of this larger-than-life 100-foot-wide reincarnation of the Angel of Retribution artwork, and it's absolutely spectacular. I mean, I can see the reaction as that all comes together, and that's just one element of a two-hour Judas Priest performance that the fans love.
Is there part of you that stands back and says, God, this is really funny?
You've got to have a Spinal Tap mentality. Spinal Tap helps, yeah, because, you know, you've got to be able to laugh at some of these things and smile and enjoy them, which is not to kind of take it as a joke or to humiliate it, but you've got to certainly be able to kind of smile at some of these things that you do. But in a loving way, in a way that you're cherishing the moment and you know the effect that it's creating and how it's making you feel yourself as you bring that effect to life. But yes, certainly, every band has a copy of Spinal Tap on the turbo.
So at its best, what does it feel like to come, you know, rising out from on this, like, hydraulic lift in your chrome costume with spotlights shining on you? Like, what does that feel like on a really good night?
Well, I'll tell you what it feels like, Terry. It feels like, I hope the lift doesn't jam. I hope the smoke machine doesn't blow up. I hope my microphone works at this height. That's what it feels like. It's a complex run of emotions right up till I start singing the song. But once the song is in full roar, it's just a very powerful, dominating type of explosion that goes on for the duration of the song. It's a very powerful song for us to perform because I think it embodies a lot of the reunion aspect that we're still enjoying right now.
So are there moments in performance now where you feel, I am a heavy metal god?
Oh, yes. Every time I get dressed before I go on stage, and I think that I can say that in all honesty. That doesn't mean to say I'm a schizophrenic or split personality, but definitely when you get dressed to go to work, your persona changes. You're getting psyched up. Your attitude is being prepared mentally And much like a boxer going to the ring or a basketball player going out to court, you know there's a job to be done with your teammates and you're going to win. And so definitely there's a feeling of confidence and a certain makeover that takes place.
You know, with Judas Priest titles like Hellion, Eat Me Alive, Devil's Child, Breaking the Law, Screaming for Vengeance, Beyond the Realms of Death, A Touch of Evil, Sinner, we can all see why parents in the 70s and 80s weren't necessarily thrilled that their children were listening to your records. What effect do you think your music has had over the years on your teenaged fans?
Well, our teenage fans have grown up now, and they're healthy, stable, balanced, family-oriented fans. They bring their children to our concerts. So if that isn't proof that Judas Priest has stood by nothing other than giving people some escape and some great nights out when they see us live and some very personal enjoyment at home on the headphones or on the speakers, then I don't know what else to say. I'm at a loss for words. It kind of puts to sleep that moment in the 80s when this, not only this band, even individuals like Sheena Easton were attacked by a political agenda that really had, in our opinions, some misconceptions. There was the one side of it about protection, which was running very close to censorship. But we all approved this PG rating. We thought it was a great idea because some of us were using language and ideas that that we felt was important to attach some kind of notification towards. But those songs that you've mentioned are but a handful of some, I don't know, 200-300 recordings that we've made over the years. Little things pop out more than others and things get more attention than others.
I want to get back to something we were talking about a little earlier, which is coming out. And what year was it that you actually came out?
Do you know, I can't be absolutely precise. I would think it was around 93, 94.
Okay. I imagine there were a lot of times when you were in a really awkward position. I mean, for example, most bands have groupies. I'm sure there were so many women waiting for you. Like, just throwing themselves at you. And, you know, how do you make it clear that, like, you know, no thanks?
Well, that's it. I mean, I'm a very polite British gentleman. No, thank you. It's as simple as that. And I'm kind of proud of that. I'm very proud of myself that I didn't go out onto this kind of extreme limb of displaying myself in a way that was not truthful, which is to say that, you know, I wasn't caught in those kinds of situations just because I felt it was important to portray myself in a certain way, being a singer in a famous heavy metal band. I couldn't do that because, again, I would have been using myself, I would have been using a lot of different things that go against my own particular standards. So, you say no, thank you, you know, and leave it at that.
Did you feel cut off from other gay people? Because if you felt you couldn't come out, it probably meant you couldn't hang out with a gay crowd.
Yes.
And so, like, you know, what do you do when you're on the road? Who do you?
Well.
Who do you hang out with?
Again, this is all about surroundings and circumstances, isn't it? Because that was a world that I didn't really walk towards or begin to investigate until I was probably in my mid-20s or so, which might sound amazing to some people, but it never really interested me. I'm still... I'm a conservative gay man and, you know, bars don't interest me, clubs don't interest me. I'm still, to some extent, invisible within the gay community. And that's because I don't really seek to be, a spokesperson for whatever things are being discussed by other celebrities, by walking out night after night in front of thousands of metal fans all over the world as a gay metal singer. That to me is my cause and my moment for celebration.
Rob Halford is the lead singer of Judas Priest. Our interview was recorded in 2005.